When the E12 Conference Committee will come to order, it's Wednesday, May 15, 2013. For us, first is early learning scholarships. So part of the global agreement, we are looking at implementing early learning scholarship program in much larger scale. It's part of the governor's program. The legislation in each body is lining up, and we have some issues that have been discussed between representatives of Many Minds, the Commissioner of Education, and we're going to ask Ms. Hilden, representing Many Minds, and the Commissioner to highlight what is in common and perhaps a couple of areas that we need to do some work on as we prepare to adopt a compromise in the next day. Ms. Hilden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and conferees. Nancy Hilden on behalf of the Many Minds campaign. This campaign started about a year ago now, actually, and was really twofold purposes. One, to take what we know about scholarships and quality access to quality early learning and how that impacts positively on kindergarten readiness, kind of taking that to scale with funding, and then also really codifying and addressing some of the issues that have cropped up as any new model that gets put into place starts to make apparent. And so when we went around the state, rural areas, different provider types, we started learning some very good things about things that could make the state's scholarship program even better. And that's what's embodied in the language that both the House and Senate have adopted. There's very little difference between the House and Senate. There's a few little nits and gnats, but largely, for the most part, really quite similar. Last Friday, as you know, the department came forward with a separate set of language, and I apologize, but I seem to have this language, and I'm sorry for my messy scratching on it, but this was handed out to all of you last Friday. There's some overlap, there's different ordering, and there's some substantive differences that we really think that you as a conference committee need to take up and discuss and walk through. So what we've done is you should have this document in front of you, and there's additional copies for people who are interested. It's a comparison. It shows in summary fashion what the House and Senate language looked like, and then we took and compiled what the proposed language from MBE looks like and how that compares. And there is some overlap, and that's good news. And there, like I said, there's some places where we need you to make some decisions going forward. But before I get to that, what I'd like to start out with is highlight another document that's been distributed. Senator Torres-Ray last Friday asked, Assistant Commissioner Hermanson was testifying, asked about what, in fact, we do know about where these kids are and what the path is and whether or not we really do know how to get these scholarships out. Federal Reserve economist Rob Grunwald has put together the summary document that shows you the basis of all the learnings that have gone on for the past 7 years on scholarships, all the basis on the economics for why we have the amounts of scholarship and the modeling. And I think maybe most interesting for you, the second page actually shows county by county where the kids are that we know are already out there and in need of this type of support as a 0 to 5 year old, 0 to 4 year old, shall we say. The final page actually takes that same information and puts dollar amounts around it. And it compares what the need is in the first column, what the Many Minds proposal in our big thinking start of the session view was, let's go for it and get it solved as big as we could, the $150 million a year. And it shows where the House and the Senate and it, essentially the governor look compared to. So we think this is very helpful information for you to go look at and really solid basis for the research, the economics, and the piloting showing that this is working. Anybody have questions about this? So then just real quickly to go through, and I have to say that this exercise of this document gave me newfound appreciation for the staff that are doing your side-by-side work. It really is hard to make sense of things when they're worded differently, but we spent a lot of time getting this into shape. This again is Article 8 in the side-by-side. And what we'll do really quickly is just a quick walkthrough of this so that you understand where we are. I mentioned last Friday that...
Excuse me, Ms. Holden, if you could focus on the nits and the nats.
Okay.
We know we're in general agreement on many points.
Yeah.
So hone in on where we have
to... Great. There's general agreement that we don't need new data practices, so I just want to kind of move beyond that. So if you look at Section 3, I would say that there's kind of a nit and nat around the idea of where are we assigning authority for this, if that's fair. And it was never the intention, I think, of the Many Minds Coalition to suggest that anyone other than MDE is where this is housed, this office. But we do also feel very strongly that it's important to codify the office and the scholarships in a way that keeps it more permanent going forward and gives it authority in statute. And so there's been a discussion that we've had back and forth about are we somehow usurping authority from commissioner or not? That's not the intent, and in fact, you know, if there are places like in Subdivision 3 where we've kind of created the Office of Early Learning with overseeing as an overseeing entity, if we want to retool that language, I think everyone would very much agree that we can find a way to fix that, and that should be just a drafting. I would say, though, and here's a nit, that we do feel very strongly that this has to be a collaboration with three agencies that are all dealing with very important pieces of this 0 to 4 year old continuum that we have to get at. So Department of Human Services and Department of Health. And so we do have language that's not found in the proposed MDC language that does suggest we need to continue that and be very clear that this is done in consultation. And strong enough we felt that that would be the preference of the Many Minds to make sure that that's done.
And perhaps, Ms. Holden, maybe on that point I'll ask the commissioner for a response, and we'll go back and forth so we can, rather than you're going through the entire document.
Thank you.
Commissioner. Sure. Well, members and chairman, thank you so much for allowing me to be here today. I think the reason that we're in this position now of being able to add really significant historic investments to early education is because of the governor's leadership in 2011. And I just want to remind members here that it is because of the governor's leadership that we got $4 million in scholarships, and because of his leadership that we pushed for Race to the Top. We had great partners with many of those who are supporting Many Minds, as well as United Way, that helped us get the Race to the Top at the time. And it was the governor who established the Office of Early Learning under the department purposefully. We had the discussion, and it was under his initiative of better government. And so the governor really was trying to provide better government and better services to the people of Minnesota by placing preschool in the Department of Education. Another thing that I want to remind members of is that he also created the Children's Cabinet through executive order. And he created the Children's Cabinet with the Department of Health and with the Department of Human Services, with the Minnesota Department of Education Commissioner as the chair of that Children's Cabinet. It's not the Office of Early Learning that is the entity between the three agencies. It is the Children's Cabinet that is the entity between three agencies. And that was what the governor intended. So I just want to be really clear with the members here on the governor's intent in the creation of both the Children's Cabinet and how that works interagency to deliver better government and services to the people of Minnesota as efficiently as possible. And also the Office of Early Learning being really a department within the Department of Education.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We have to go up quickly, I guess.
Sorry, Commissioner.
We're at brief recess.
Do you wear your track shoes today?
There, we're in recess.
Thank you.
Sorry, don't worry.
Conference committee will resume. Commissioner Casalias.
It's the one.
Can't be a
I was just about finished, actually, explaining about the agency and the Office of Early Learning being within and being a division within the agency. We've actually tried to really broaden that cross-functionally with all the other work that we've been doing to align in our literacy plans, our other achievement plans that we're working on. So it's just very integrated into what we do because pre-K learning should be part of education continuum. And that's how we're seeing it. I think that's what the governor was thinking when he put preschool into the agency, is that it would better align if it was in the education agency. So that's how we see that.
Thank you.
Ms. Hilden, let's go to the next point where we need to resolve.
Yep. Moving on, then subdivision, I guess just to underscore this, I think there's really more common ground here and understanding, and the goal here is to codify the good work that is being done now by the governor and the governor's agencies in this area. But let's see. Moving down, not really anything major on page one that I think is a knit and gnat. So let's get to a good meaty subject, top of page two, scholarship amount. We have spent, and this document is based on the economic modeling, and I want to refer you to the very bottom of this page, and again, this is, I'm citing this document because Rob Grunwald is who we're looking to largely. The current statutory scholarship cap of $4,000 is not based on either research or economic data. It was an arbitrary number. And so when we are trying to improve upon the good work and the modeling that's been done, what we're relying on is research and economic data. And you can see we are using the pilots that have already happened, the market survey rates that are already being collected and gathered by the department, and cost studies that are being done. So you can see the rationale and justification for that here. It's a decision point. You know, the upsides of doing a cap at 4,000 is you get to do an easy calculation. 4,000 times X kids equals how much money you have. Slightly more nuanced, but we would argue a preferable and more flexible option is to give the scholarships an average amount that is targeted, but acknowledge the fact that we actually really do have children that are currently underserved that have needs that are going to cost well over $4,000. And the example I will give you is the mentally ill mother with a child at home who needs full-time, everyday support while they're being raised in that home setting. They need everything, and $4,000 simply just does not cut it. So let's give the agency some flexibility, but still let's be accountable with an average.
Commissioner.
Chairman, members, it's really about revenue and impact for us. I mean, it's kind of like free and reduced price lunch. You know, you get it, all of your child care paid, or you get some of it paid, most of it paid, and you can get it out to more people, more kids. And I think we did an estimate, and my staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be about 10,000 scholarships that we could get out, which is probably, you know, absolutely not enough of the need. We all agree, I think, at this table that we wish we had more revenue to work with, and hopefully in a couple years we will. But if we have at 6,000, I think it was 3,200 kids, then 3,600 kids could get served. So we cut out 6,400 kids. Or,
2,000 is a biennial number.
2,000 biennial, sorry. And so it's much, so 4,000 kids total would be able to get it with 6,000, at 6,000.
No, it would be, you're right, about 3,600 a year.
Yes. Okay. The 10,000 is the total that we were doing as a biennial number.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, but still much less amount of students that would be able to then get into it. And we felt like because we're also opening this up to siblings and also opening up to teen parents potentially, if that's something that you agreed to in the language, then some families could end up with larger amounts. And that's something that's been a value of the Children's Cabinet, is to support families as well as support children. So that's why we opened it up to the siblings being able to have preference on those scholarships. But then that would then have less families also engaged in the program if there were more siblings engaged in the program as well. So this is really a revenue issue for us and an impact issue, trying to get this broadened out. And as we have more revenue available in the future, I think then we would have the ability then to be able to broaden it potentially.
Questions, comments on the cap issue?
Mr. Chair. Ms. Hilden, I mean, what would be the difference? I mean, exactly, kind of with the 4,000 cap, the difference between having some flexibility. I mean, what type of situations do you see? I mean, is it they just would not get the quality of care, or just wouldn't be available in the market rate? Or, I mean, what is the downside of, in kind of practical terms, if you could? Because I think that is kind of the crux of things.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. So the difference is, you got to understand, you know, not every child has the equal need, and so there are some children who need not every day, all day. There are some children that need full. So there's a variable there that is hard to put into a nice, flat, easy calculation. There's also variations widely among provider types, and I would point out that, you know, of the various providers, and it's not bad or good, it's just that, you know, probably family care is the lowest cost, and school-based care tends to be on the higher end of the costs of care. And then as you get into younger age groups, costs go up because younger children cost more. So to answer your question, you know, between the 4,000 and 6,000, I don't have the numbers on the 4,000, but I think that the calculation was done based on reaching 10,000 kids under the governor's calculation. If you look on page 2 of this document that Rob put together, the House's amount of spending in this biennium, at the very bottom, right below Yellow Medicine County, 9,263 children could be reached under the House version, and under the Senate version, 8,347. And that's based on his modeling. And I want to just make one caveat that in the first biennium, the average scholarship is likely to be slightly lower, $5,600, than the average of 6,000, because there aren't as many 3- and 4-star rated programs yet. So there's a lot of, I hate to give you such a complicated answer, but it's a complicated question.
Commissioner.
Chairman, I was just thinking, and that's just another piece, is the issue of scale-up. I mean, we certainly know how to do this now. We've been doing it for 2 years. But there is the issue of scale-up. Every community comes different. And like Ms. Hilden said, no one situation can be replicated. They're all very unique. And so that means the context changes. And so we have to be willing to work within that context. And so having the cap that way allows us to be in more regions of the state. It allows us to be in a much broader and diverse environment of settings for children, and then to be able to evaluate that and then have even better information as we go forward in any kind of expansion of a program for preschool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just with all due respect, I just have to disagree that putting a cap where you are restricting your ability to reach out in different communities
does not give you flexibility. It really it takes away flexibility.
Representative Rudall, Senator Blaskis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to, I guess, reiterate a point that I raised, I think, when this topic came up earlier, you know, certainly flexibility is good. I do still have a concern, and it's why I support the higher dollar amount, because the question becomes, do we reach more students with a lower amount or have a potentially greater impact on a fewer number of students with more money? And so I think I go with the latter approach.
Noted. Senator Johnson.
Ms. Hilden, you said, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hilden, you said the number was 5619. Is that what you said?
Sure.
Something like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look at Rob Grunwald's document, very bottom paragraph, his modeling accounts for the fact that in these first years, we still don't have as many rated programs at the 3- and 4-star level. And so as that goes up, then the scholarship with quality goes up. It's not a lot. You'll see 5,600 to the average of 6,000. So, but I just wanted to point that out, that it's slightly less on average in that first biennium.
And, Mr. Chair, and what I was getting at is I know it isn't much lower, but it is lower. So 5,600 would allow you to probably pick up, I don't know, maybe 100 more kids or something like that. I mean, if you figured it out in mathematically.
Mr. Chair, these are the numbers based on that 5,600.
Oh, that's the numbers
year,
on the 5,600.
And the second biennium is the 6,000.
Recess. The conference committee will resume. We're reviewing the early learning scholarship program, a priority that each of us shares. We are now into the details, or as they said, the nits and the gnats. We've looked at a couple of items to resolve. I believe there's three or four others. We'll continue. Ms. Hill.
Yep. Right up here, there's
so,
some flexibility.
Let's go to, at the bottom of page two, and I think there's a couple issues going on here. So a child, you know, in the Mini-Minds proposal, what a concept that we heard from everywhere across the state was, once a child is in, we got to let them stay in. We can't have what's happening now where some slight change happens in the family circumstance, and then they fall off, then they go back on. And so very clearly and expressly in the language of your bills is that once the child is in, they are in, period. There's language that in the department's proposed language that makes the scholarship endure 12 months, and then it's not quite clear. And I don't know if it's necessarily exactly contradictory, but what our real important point is that once you're in, until you hit kindergarten, you are in with the scholarship. And so it's something that has to be accounted for and is a difference.
Commissioner.
I have notes here from Lisa, and she might want to speak to it. And I know that Dr. Cadigan is on her way, and I'm not sure if she's here as well yet. But maybe Dr. Cadigan would be best to speak to it if she's here.
Sure. Cadigan, for the record, state your name and on this point.
Karen Cadigan, Director of the Office of Early Learning at the Department of Education. Senator, remind me the issue.
The 6 to 12 months. And the difference. Maybe Nancy can restate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you restate the issue?
Oh, just this whole idea that, and it's not, it does not kind of surface in the proposed language from the department, but it's very express and important in our language that once a child is into this scholarship program, that the scholarship endures with the child until they hit kindergarten. The language suggests in Subdivision 2 that the scholarship lasts for 12 months, and it's not fully apparent what happens after that. And so there's kind of a, we just need to work out, I think, some kind of a gap-filling accommodation there.
I understand the question. Thank you, Senator, for rephrasing it. I think that we, of course, are implementing scholarships statewide right now in a small percentage, and we have not yet made a decision about this point. I think this is a good example of the kind of thing that we may, at the department, may prefer some administrative flexibility around, though I can certainly see the point of continuity of care.
Question.
Sorry, Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to do that, you'd have to carry a reserve of some sort. And so I suppose the question would be is how much of a reserve, and then the balance of getting the money out versus carrying the reserve. So, I mean, those seem to be the issues that would be need to be answered. I mean, you'll get criticized if the reserve's too much and the money's not getting out, and then you'll be criticized if you run out of money and have to cut somebody off.
Commissioner, you'd be responsible for that reserve?
I guess I would. I'm asking for the responsibility here, Chairman. I think also another piece to remember is if we grandfather in, so to speak, children every year, and I do think we could discuss further multiple years. I think we just need to be aware that then that's less in. So you have the students who are already in there now because we've done this fast ramp up, do multiple years to continue that, which is absolutely something for discussion. But then that's less availability to get out across the entire state because they're already guaranteed. And so I think some flexibility and some discussion around that would be important to have, so that we can make sure that they're fairly getting out metro region, you know, across all areas of the state as we ramp up the 3 and 4 rated programs.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that actually highlights a very important point about tails, because what we really heard a lot about this year was from the schools who have a very difficult time when you come in with your budget in July and they've already been enrolling kids in March and April, and then the scholarship does, you know, their class time doesn't start. And so a steady trajectory and a steady commitment by the state for these children is really not a reserve, so to speak, but it sure puts us on a more solid path to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to help these kids be ready. Just walking through.
It probably would also speak in favor of a solid number versus the flexibility, because the more flexibility, the more unstable the number.
If I may, the idea of an average does bring some accountability in, so we're not kind of wildly suggesting that this is going to fluctuate all over, and we do have that check and balance as an option. And that's actually in your side, the Senate language. So another important point of difference is on page 3, the continuation of subdivision 6 under paren B. I didn't really know where to fit this in because we do not include it, but on page 3, there was a position in subdivision 4 of the department's language saying no supplanting of state, federal, or local dollars. We heard very strongly from schools that they don't want to be penalized for having put dollars in the early side of this that are committed to early ed, and then if that gets taken away, that somehow they can't take advantage of scholarships. And so, I think that's, again, just a real strong dividing point, and that nobody's trying to let anybody game the system, but we're certainly giving the department a lot of discretion to identify those kinds of things. But you don't have to say no supplanting, because that gets you into trouble when you do have
entities. Well, Chairman, as Commissioner, I have responsibilities for the state budget and the federal budget, and this is very problematic for us because we have to ensure and guarantee that when we have federal money, we do not supplant funds, but that they are supplemental. And knowing that we have our federal early Race to the Top scholarships, and we also could potentially have additional funding from the federal government with the president's proposal to increase early childhood across the nation, I think that we just wanted to be very clear about this language so that we don't then risk not getting federal funding that could be some sort of match in the future. It's very, very critical for future funding from the federal government.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, so some of the sources of dollars that were concerns around this were you applying some Title I dollars to early ed, and applying local levies to early education, and then if that ever was removed, does that put the school basically in a bad spot because they would then be supplanting? So I think this sounds really like we just have to figure out the way to make clear what we're talking about and be flexible.
And Chairman, we just want to protect ourselves in language as a state and recognizing that so that we don't have ourselves at risk for not receiving further funds.
So at the bottom of page 3 under subdivision, the House version of subdivision 8, House and Senate, there you'll see that this building quality, this was something we heard a lot from the rural areas where there aren't a lot of providers that are exposed yet to parent aware, and there's a lot of fear actually about what this means to get rated, and if you don't get rated at a 3 or 4, is that damaging to your business? And so we spent time shaping this building quality idea where you are willing to enter the quality rating system as a prospective provider. We have a window for only fiscal years 14 and 15 to do that, but you can get in, you can use the resources that you gain from a scholarship to develop your curriculum, to train your staff, which we have great examples where they just don't, they're not sitting on a lot of capital. These are kind of very small, hard to run, shoestring businesses. Mm-hmm. So that would help them bridge up. In the department's proposed language, there's wording that says under subdivision 4A2 that after July 1, 2014, only providers with 3 or 4 stars will qualify. This seems unrealistic. And so I think we just need to find a way to make sure that we're not creating a failure before we really entice. We want enticement. We don't want walking people out.
Commissioner.
Well, Chairman, I think that with the language here, the reason that we put in the date was really starting to look at guaranteeing quality and trying to get that incentive out there for folks to do that. However, we also want to and know that there are bumps in the road and that we need to be flexible. So I think that we should continue to have conversation about the actual date for when we will expect a 3 and a 4.
On page 4, the department in the report section, subdivision 12, and this was something actually Representative Breinert spent quite a bit of time at the end working on, where we want to make sure that when we're doing scholarships that we're able to look at the outcomes and evaluate the outcomes and using kindergarten readiness. And so there's actually amendment language that's been prepared by Tim Strom. We've talked about it in committee. And really it gets to this idea of when you're in scholarship, linking it to the MARS, and then making sure that when we do kindergarten readiness screening, we get some data back so that we know what the outcomes are. That was not addressed in the MDE proposal, but what they did do is have propose that an independent contractor would evaluate the scholarship program itself.
there are already Passer, the former MELF, has done and is doing independent evaluation at a very high level. That's the part that we already know. We know from since 2007, the data on the scholarship model is working. So that's not the evaluation we need. What we want to know is how are we performing with these kids and how do we keep improving. So we would argue that what we really want to get at is, and not kind of keep restudying the same thing, what we want to get at is let's target and see what's going on out in the communities and try to and use that data to get us to a better place.
Response, Commissioner?
Well, Chairman, I respectfully disagree that a small project in St. Paul would be the same in any other area across the state. I mean, we know broadly that schools in one area might not be the same in another area, and effectiveness in one school is very different than effectiveness even classroom hallway to hallway. And so, I mean, evaluation across settings is very, very important, and across regions, because that helps us then to scale up in the future to know where to put our dollars. So I think that that's critical.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, when we had this discussion in the House, I think the concern we were trying to raise is what is the relationship between the parent-aware ratings and kindergarten readiness? So do they correlate? Does the four to the higher star rating indeed predict that children are ready for kindergarten? And we don't know that. We may know that the scholarship programs are successful, but we don't know. I don't know if we have that data across the we need that data across the state. I guess that's what we were looking for.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Breinert, Ms. Moss from Passer is vociferously saying that is exactly what we're doing. And so just like sometimes we have these drug tests where they kind of all of a sudden stop the control group because the results are so overwhelmingly where we know. That's what we want to avoid. We don't want to keep studying the same thing, and we've got a private independent evaluation going on. So we want to keep measuring. We want to keep knowing the number, but we don't want to keep reevaluating what we know works.
Representative Breiner.
Okay. Well, what I would suggest is we do this all the time in K-12. We're looking at data every year, and we still question whether the data is indeed reliable and we reevaluate our evaluation cycles on a regular basis. So I haven't been assured in terms of seeing the data that this question is answered in an ongoing way, and that the program, the scholarship program, which is new, will be held accountable to these kindergarten readiness standards.
Commissioner?
Chairman, Representative Breiner, Ms. Hilden, members, we can't, I don't think, and maybe I'm just don't know, direct a private group to do evaluations for the state. You can direct the commissioner, I think, or the Office of Early Learning to contract with a private group to do it. But what if the private group decides not to be there any longer and then we don't have the evaluation? So I don't know how we can guarantee that. I mean, I don't think you can write a private group in the legislation. Maybe you can. I just don't know.
Erica Moss, Parent Aware for School Readiness. What we're doing is an ongoing validation study of the ratings to get at exactly what Representative Breinert is talking about. So are the things that we're asking providers to do at the 1, 2, 3, and 4-star level amounting to school readiness outcomes in children? We're doing a sample on an ongoing basis, and we're committed to doing that in the Race to the Top plan through 2015. And it looks like we just have been talking with our evaluation partners. Some of that's going to carry over into 16. And so what will be possible will be to, if we know who the scholarship kids are and what kinds of programs they're in, we can walk back to the parent aware evaluation and make some, you know, conclusions about how they're doing in terms of kindergarten preparedness based on the same sample. So I think we can get to an efficient model in a public-private partnership kind of way that works.
Further comments or questions, members, on that provision? Ms. Hogan?
Mr. Chair, you know, I want to be clear. Nobody's afraid of data here. We have no fear of data. It's just when there's limited dollars,
and we have this going on, and actually that's good to point out, it's through the federal Race to the Top. Why would we duplicate that when we already have such a wealth of evidence that we know this is going in a good direction? It's not about being afraid of the data, and we want to know where that data continues to go and see the outcomes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a number of things that aren't addressed. We won't go into those that didn't get touched on in the MDE language. So, but just moving on, this will be the final thing that I'll touch on. This was something that didn't come up in the language that is in Article 8, but in Subdivision 3, there's language that says that if the appropriations are insufficient, the commissioner can determine the scholarship distribution considering geography, communities, and the schools with districts with highest needs. We went down this path, and we've actually proposed removing all data that's very subjective. And so we would suggest that, kind of in that same vein, we don't want to go down a subjective path with deciding who does or doesn't get scholarship. And in fact, I think once you run out of money, you just run out of money. Hopefully we don't get to the point where we're sequestering state funds, but that's kind of the point here, is that we don't want the subjectivity.
And Chairman and members, the way that we structured our proposal and the governor's proposal, it would require that we have this language. If you are working from the Mini Minds language, then it's unnecessary.
Sarah Johnson.
Ms. Heldon, what would you do if this situation came up under your plan?
I think that, number one, we would want to avoid, just as we were advised by council, to avoid subjective decisions on how the letting go of scholarship recipients would happen. And I think that you could, administratively identify a pathway to notifying recipients that the scholarships are coming to an end. So it's not a happy moment to do that, but I think there are administrative ways to do that without putting in a school district with highest needs. I mean, which of you can tell me which school district has the highest need? So it's just, I think that you have to have a global and administrative decision for how to do it.
Further comments? Commissioner,
I'm being told that this is in current law, and this is how we are actually doing it now. I just want to talk about the subjectivity of the commissioner and the position of the commissioner and how that works and the number of decisions that the commissioner has to make. And I'm not talking just about Brenda here. I'm talking about all the things that legislatively you ask the executive commissioners and decisions that you ask us to make every day, from setting up cut scores to establishing ways of executing scholarships. All of that may seem subjective, but the commissioner is under a lot of responsibility to make sure that I look at the data and make sure that I'm looking objectively at all the information that's available. I rely on experts. We often meet with many stakeholders when we do these things. I mean, you've seen the results of our working groups on bullying and on all of our task forces that we've done. We have really had a broad base in those decisions, and when they have to be made, even in doing our innovation zones, we had put together an advisory task force for that. So I just want to address that subjective nature of the decisions.
That's good to hear, and if this is in current law, then that's great, because I think then certainly we're not taking a I guess then we probably don't need to really restate it in this proposal.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. I think it's, I don't know if the commissioner was intending to make the argument this way or not, but it seems to me that the early learning director, if this is under that position, she can be much more focused on this, where the commissioner needs to take a broader view of a lot of these areas. So I guess that's my 2 cents worth on it.
Further comments at this point? We're not going to act on this provision yet or entertain amendments. Senator Gorsuch-Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if we can move on into some questions about budget. I want to understand some of the distribution. There are a couple of issues that I want to talk about and I want to have clarity. So when we talk about collecting the numbers and how the numbers are put together, whether they are in DHS or they are in the Department of Education, and partner where to collect the information, and you do too, and DHS does too, and how those systems kind of come together. And you said, you know, the information is being collected, so you're under contract as an organization, Ms. Mass. You're under contract to provide. I'm not clear as to how this information actually flows and works, and who's responsible for doing the work. Because I think part of the issue is.
Ms. Masso rejoins.
As you know, my struggle has been the fragmentation of this system, and you know, I put a bill forward this year to actually put together an administration of early childhood, because one of the issues that I know from working in both departments for a number of years is that we have a fragmented system that collects information, shares information. Sometimes we have contracts with nonprofits that do the work on our behalf. So how does the actual collection system that informs these decisions that we're making here at the end of the day work?
Do you want to start by talking about?
Senator. Through the thank you, Mr. Chair. So through the Race to the Top grant, mm-hmm. we do have an agreement. It's not a formal contract. Per se, we have a number of partners written into the Race to the Top grant that are responsible for certain components of our plan. You may remember that was a very statewide, community-based, public and private plan. And within that, one of the agreements we have is that PASSER will continue to do ongoing evaluation about parent aware. The other quite relevant point that is part of the Race to the Top grant is the cross-agency data system that we're building. Which is really a tremendous gift, I think, to Minnesota through our Race to the Top grant. And we've been working in tremendous ways with the Department of Health, Department of Human Services, and the Department of Education to have meaningful data about prenatal, when it's appropriate, to third grade, especially up to fifth grade.
So, Dr. Kettingen, these were dollars that came from the feds. They are one-time money. So my question is, what are we going to do after those dollars, after we're done with that? Because we're not going to receive more dollars from the feds. We don't know. We may. So, as a state, we need to think about, so what do we do with all the things that you've built?
We do. It's a good point. And I think going back to the department's position, I think, to the issue of collecting data about every single kid versus having program evaluation, that program evaluation seems like a meaningful way to go in order to bridge that gap and then in order to balance how we use resources.
So technically, we do not have money to continue this. This was a one-time good exercise. Collect all of this information, and then we no longer have it.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, I am an optimist, and we also did build into the Race to the Top plan taking steps to look towards sustainability, to what that would look like. We're not having that conversation right now today, but that is part of the work of the Race to the Top grant.
I believe the commissioner was going to add to that. Commissioner.
Chairman and Senator Torres-Ray, our chief information officer, who is now with Minute, he oversees the Office of Higher Ed and and the Minnesota Department of Education with the technology integration that's happening across all agencies, we are building, they call it the baby sleds, which is a infrastructure to support data collection. And certainly that will be the infrastructure that's built to kind of sustain it. It's just like any money we would get from the federal government. It's unfortunately dependent on the Congress appropriating it outright, and so it can change. But we know that there is a commitment from this current administration to invest in early learning. There is that has always been the string of having data systems attached to that, and we are committed to continuing to evaluate programs and effectiveness to bring information back to this body so that we can continue to make good decisions in the future. It's been wonderful to have these private partnerships in the early learning space to be able to have public and private working together, and I think that's a big reason why we secured the Race to the Top grant, quite honestly. It was early in our administration, and we really were able to work collaboratively and still are working collaboratively, so we will continue to seek out public and private funding, as well as we have an infrastructure now that we're building at the agencies.
You do. Just to follow up,
Senator Torsman.
Mr. Chairman. So when I think about the numbers that we are contemplating here for these scholarships, we have $25 million. This is Senate. I'm just reading from the Senate, not too different from the House. So we are $25 million for $50 million for the biennium. $950,000, almost $1 million for the administration of that. If you remember, members, we have I just know the numbers well for the pieces that I have been reviewing on integration. Mm. We did a 0.2 appropriation, which is $250,000 for $153 million. So this is 50 million, 153, 950. My point here, I do believe that this funding is necessary, but I do believe that there is a need for institutionalizing a better way of collecting information and really understanding, you know, how these numbers actually are collected, what are we learning, and I don't think that has been well articulated in this proposal. And if we don't do that, I think that the use of resources, you know, when I compare just integration and early childhood and this program, you know, looking at a $1 million proposal for administration and not having a clear understanding of how that information is collected, to me it's problematic. I think it's a significant amount of money for administering this on top of the administrative dollars that you receive for early childhood education, because this is just additional for some scholarships, but they would be working in coordination with early childhood programs already. So it's a significant amount of money, I think.
Commissioner. Chairman and Senator, you are absolutely correct. It is a significant amount of money, and I think that we did do a fiscal note for it. I don't have it in front of me for all the detail on what would detail out for it, but there was a fiscal note done for it. And I agree with you. I think the one of the reasons that we had some difficulty with the integration program the past several years is because we were insufficiently staffed at the department. And still with the current proposal on the table, we will still be insufficiently staffed to administer a $118 million program. And just to be real honest with the table here about the capacity at the State Department, we run the QComp program out of our Title II dollars, which is legal. And we don't have any money appropriated for that, and we didn't get any money appropriated for teacher evaluation. And this is just my moment to vent with the committee about this. So the 950 probably is the accurate amount for what we need to really do a statewide system for pre-K that's in multiple settings, not just in our schools. And so we're coming asking to be able to do it right. For once, and not shortchanging the department. And so I think that, you know, I don't often come at the table and ask for more money for the department because I want every dollar spent on kids, and you know that. But I do say that if we're going to be able to deliver the world's best workforce that, you know, Representative Marquardt has talked about, then doggone it, we need to have an agency that's not just out there pushing paper but actually supporting schools to do it and teachers to get the results with our kids.
So just a final comment, Ms. Chairman, by no means I am advocating for changing this number. I think it's important that we do that. I just wanted to make a point about the future need of collecting information, having information that really helps us understand the need for future investment. Because if these things get done and these studies get put together, whether they are put together by the university, by foundations, by whomever, we're always having to come back to study it again, to say the obvious, and ask for funding again. We need to institutionalize, you know, the system that collects information that helps the state make the case so that you can come directly to us without having to apply for a grant in order to come to us. That's all I wanted to point out.
Ms. Hilden.
Mr. Chair, I would say that Many Minds wholeheartedly supports the commissioner in her plea to make sure that these things are done right and done well. So there's no disagreement in that point at all. And, you know, I got to say, we didn't really come up with that number. I think that is just the fiscal number. There's a slight difference where we, you know, we see that the language in the House and Senate bill says for administration of the program, i.e., specifically the scholarships. In MDE's language, it says for department administration. And so we just want to make sure that the dollars are going to what is intended. So, but that's doesn't rise to the level of anything disagreeing. We wholeheartedly want the department to do things well with the staff they need.
Well, thank you to each of you. We know you are passionately devoted to the common goal that we share. That Representative Marquardt to each of us is totally committed to Ready for K. And this is the key to closing the achievement gap. What we have before us, and we've got to get it right. The measurement, the information is crucial, because then by getting that data, we're going to know how effective the systems are. So,
correction. I want to make a correction and call this the, you know, lobbyist buy here. I said the schools were the high end. It's the Head Start, and I apologize. It's just my only having been around this committee for 4 years now.
Okay. We'll ask you to continue working on that, and if there's some additional language by tomorrow or actually tonight, because I'm hoping we might be meeting tonight. And Commissioner, on a personal note, we know you, our prayers are with you. We know your 42-year-old brother is dying right now of a brain tumor. And thank you for being here. Members, we're going to go next to standards for restrictive procedures and definition of prone restraints. And we'll ask Ms. Everholden to join us. And I believe we have a couple of provisions that we're ready to adopt, one in the House, one in the Senate, and we'll ask Ms. Everholden to address those. The first in the House, Article 5, R5, Section 4, and then we'll go to the Senate, Article 5, HR3, Section 2. Ms. Everholden, for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. So the language in the bills is what has been worked out by all the interested parties. The department had a task force that worked all last fall. As you know, this is not an easy issue, and we had special ed directors and advocates and a lot of different folks there. And so this is the compromise that was reached. And I guess I would just say that there is not anyone that likes the use of prone restraints or any restrictive procedures at all. But we know that we need teachers and staff to have training. We have all the important components in our law in terms of training, data collection, reviewing the procedures after it's been done to, you know, kind of a critical incident to see if there was something that could have been done differently. And so I think the main provisions, the changes, are really to take out of the definition of emergency physical destruction, because what we know is if someone, it's too easy to abuse that definition. And if a child is really picking up something heavy to destroy, they're going to hurt themselves or someone else. So that was that one. Did you want to do
questions
the amendment?
Questions on that provision. Okay, and we'll take the other one as well, and then we'll entertain a motion if that's what Representative Marquardt.
And did you want the two definite the amendment changes?
Yes.
Okay. The two amendments. And the two amendments that were going to be offered was to this was worked out with Education Minnesota with some concerns that they raised. One is getting rid of the word highly qualified paraprofessional because it didn't really make any sense. Any paraprofessional or teacher still has to have all the training, so highly qualified was taken out. And then we changed the effective date because the effective date was going to be immediately after enactment, and it made more sense to start with the next school year.
And is there a rep from Ed Minnesota like to indicate anything? And is there anything to
you
hand
didn't
out?
Get this? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, do
Representative Marker.
Do we have a copy of what you're going off there or not?
I mean,
you
don't.
Staff
make a copy?
I don't
know.
Which one are we on?
Sorry about that.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Representative Marker. We'll distribute that.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. I think my memory isn't so good.
Well, no, that's not it.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might, the one other tiny change is to make sure that the committee that's going to continue to look at this issue and to, you know, look at the data and how it's being implemented will also now include teachers and paraprofessionals.
Members review that, and I believe it's non-controversial at this point.
Mr. Chair, either one's fine. So we can I'll move the 107-2 amendment.
Further discussion? Anyone in the audience I'd like to address that? All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried.
Thank you.
Ms. Abraholen. Next item. For student support services, Ms. Sandvig has been working on that particular provision, and it's in Article 3, R36, Section 14, Line 28.28, and we have a Senate provision, then we're going to go to a House provision, next on deaf and hard of hearing regarding license for a House provision. Ms. Sandvig, identify yourself with a
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I represent school nurses and school social workers. And this language, there were two bills. Senator Johnson had one and Representative Benson did. And originally it was looking at funding and a grant program for, well, actually the original bill was a ratio bill for counselors. And then it was modified to look as a grant program for student support services, and then without the money, we had study language. Basically, the language that was in the House was not, we had been working, quite frankly, with the counselors on some of the language. There's within pupil support services not as much emphasis with school nurses and school social workers as far as the ratios. We want to look as far as best practices and looking at there's overlap when you're dealing with kind of a team approach and things. So the language, after we looked at the House language, we had been working on other language, and so the Senate reflects kind of that multidisciplinary approach and looking at that when you're looking at caseloads and things like that, you can't just look at it for one individual pupil support because there's overlapping roles. So I would just say that we support the Senate language as far as looking at how pupil support services work together and also looking at the needs of the children in different settings. We look at a team might be different in one school versus another one, and we think the study takes into account that language.
Questions, comments? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address this provision? Representative Markert?
No, Mr. Chair, do we have an amendment, or are we just going off?
No, we'll go right off the...
Okay, what page is that again? Just so we know exactly what we're doing here.
Article 3, R36, Section 14.
Do you have more copies of this? Okay. I don't think we've got dates. Thank you. Very good. All right. Mr. Chair, I'll move that language.
Representative Markert's motion. Discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
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 Thank you. And next, we have a House provision in Article 3, page R14, sub 1, line 66.9. I'll ask staff if we have.
What was the page?
R14.
Bell's gone. Let's kill it. Bell's gone.
Okay. Well, Mary Hartnett had advocated this. It's a House provision. We're fine with it. In good faith, we could just entertain a motion. We would ask first if there's anyone in the audience that would like to address that provision. Questions of the committee? Representative Markert?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that article, your amendment.
Discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Arnson.
Sure. Just maybe on the record, make sure we know which body's language we're taking.
Very good. I'll move the House language, Article 3, page R14, subdivision 1, line 66.9.
Thank you. On that motion, further discussion? If not, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
And one item to discuss, possibly act on, Mr. Lundell, is he here? The House has a provision in Article 1. It's Article 1, page R9, Section 6, line 7.22. And the Senate did, I believe it was a late introduction. We didn't have a chance to consider that, but I believe it's non-controversial. And just for a heads up, following this, we're going to look at some compromise language on Special Education Caseloads Task Force for an amendment. Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee, my name is Brad Lundell here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. This provision emanates from, it's an issue that's been kind of battered around for the last few years, and it used to be that districts could allocate their transportation expenses for a special ed based on per route, per cost per mile, cost per route, cost per student, or cost per hour. There was a bill passed about 2 years ago that limited that, and as a result, there was it pushed a lot of more work down to the district level. And we had several, we had a number of transportation directors and business managers who, felt that the work was very, very onerous. We've gone to introducing the bill this year. There was the initial bill had a cost to the Department of Education. It has been changed so that there is no cost to the Department of Education on that. It just simply allows districts to report their transportation costs on their contract rates. This is also supported by the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials.
Would anyone from the department like to address this?
Mr. McHenry? And Dr. Melchin?
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. This particular provision, we see some pluses and minuses too. On the positive side, I think it would be helpful to simplify the accounting and paperwork that school districts do in terms of tracking the cost of transportation. On the negative side, there is a potential that if we give school districts more flexibility in cost allocations that it could increase the costs that are reported in the special transportation category some. There wouldn't be a cost to the state because we would simply prorate special education a little bit more in the event that there was more cost allocated in the transportation area. Currently, we fund regular transportation based on a student count, and we fund special transportation based on 100% reimbursement of expenditures. And the origination of this requirement to do the standardized reporting on a cost per mile basis was a result of some audit findings that we had from the department, where school districts had kind of an incentive to put as much cost as they could on the special education side because it was reimbursed 100% and not on the other side. So it's not an issue for us in terms of a fiscal impact to the state, but it could result in a small reduction in the proration rate for special education. We just wanted you to be aware of that.
Questions of Dr. Melcher or Mr. Lundell? Does anyone in the audience like to address the conference committee? Comments, questions? Representative Markert, would you like to?
Mr. Chair, if we're ready, I would like to move then. Article 1. Yes, very good. House Article 1, page R9, section 6, beginning line 7.22.
Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Next, we have some compromise language addressing the Special Education Caseload Task Force. I believe there's an amendment to distribute it.
Yes.
Ms. Elling and if Ms. Aberholden would like to rejoin us.
Is that your own?
And as it's being distributed, we'll have you re-identify yourself and highlight what we have, which we think is a...
Can you tell, Mr. Chair, can you tell us where you're, what pages you might be looking at?
Attorney Johnson.
Okay. Yeah, it's
here it is.
Keyed right on the amendment here.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, Sue Abner-Holden, NAMI, Minnesota. So what this does is eliminates the language about where we exceed federal. I think I'm probably the only one in the room that can say this, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and thinking you're going to get a different result. We have done this exercise at least 2 to 3 times, and we've made the changes that we could, that everyone agreed on a couple years ago. And what we had talked about both in the House and the Senate is really looking more broadly at how can we produce, you know, a cost-effective, cost-efficient special education system that actually improves the outcomes of children. That's what you really want. And by boxing this group in to only look at where we exceed federal and to do a cost-benefit, we aren't going to be able to think creatively. We do think it's important that we look at which state rules should be revised. When we made the changes a couple years ago, the state rules were not revised, and that's caused some confusion. So that would be a good step forward for this group to come back and identify those things that we should change. But I really do feel like the last couple of years, you know, everyone involved in special education has really been able to come together and have some really good conversations and discussions. And I think we just need to take that next step and do it further. And again, that kind of boxes us in. And Elaine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Elaine Keefe representing the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. And I agree with everything Ms. Abner-Holden said. I do want to point out that the charge to the task force that is already in the House language does include coming up with recommendations for cost-effective and efficient strategies and structures for improving student outcomes. And so that gets at that, looking at how we can really improve the system. And the other thing I want to say is that we did work on this amendment with the department and with MACE and the School Boards Association, and I think this represents a good consensus.
Representative Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sure that you, in your discussion, this was all clear, but my question comes from the fact that I think this language in the House came from the state auditor's report, and that was the impetus for the recommendation was the cost-benefit analysis about the deviations in the language. So I'd just like to hear you respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reinhart, first of all, the OLA report
report, they were required to look at where we exceed federal. So that wasn't something they came up with. They were required to do that as their charge. I actually don't believe that that will add enough to the discussion to make someone change. When you look down it, I mean, the reason everyone goes to this is to say, well, is there some paperwork we can reduce? Because that, you know, for some reason will save us lots of money. Well, the department is looking at paperwork reduction strategies. When you look actually in the OLA report with the comparison, very little of it has to do with actual paperwork that is done by teachers. The caseloads actually gets at that more. And so I think what they were trying to say is just don't do the comparison over again. You know, maybe you should do a cost-benefit analysis. But I don't think that will get at the agreements and the compromises and really look deeply at what are the outcomes of these students and how can we improve them. I think it just, again, is, I don't want to use the word red herring, but it just pulls us off into a discussion that we just focus on that language instead of looking at our system and say, how can we do this better?
Further questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Aberholden. You mentioned a couple times we've been through this before. When was the last time, and what were the results? I mean, were there any federal or any state requirements that were eliminated that were exceeding federal? What were the results of that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Markwart. There were. Actually, one of the biggest changes was changing the age of transition services. Before, it could start in middle school, and the federal law, I believe, is, I'm trying to remember, 16. And what we said is it should start in high school. Middle schools don't really have those kinds of counselors and things like that. So we said, no, it should start in high school. That would make sense. It kind of goes along with everything. There were a lot of changes that were made with the we had two lawyers in a room, so they looked at all of the mediation and due process and all of those kinds of things to really streamline it and make it similar. And burden of proof was changed. So there was actually, there was a lot of work that went on, and that was in 2009. And I remember there were, several of you were here at the table. We were upstairs in the top of the state office building in a very, very hot room, really forcing us to move forward and come up with some compromises.
Mr. Cherry Lane Keefe again, if I could just add to that, the OLA report did point out that the rules are no longer consistent with the statutes, and that is because of all the statutory changes that were made in 2009 after that task force worked for 2 years. And that's why those rules need to be updated, is because we did do some pretty extensive changes to the statutes.
Thank you. Further comments, questions? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address this? Commissioner.
Chairman and members, I just want to really commend the advocates and stakeholders for really working with us on this and prone restraint and all the other very sticky kind of items that we have to work through. And it's just been in a really good spirit about putting students first. And I just wanted to comment on that and the spirit of sometimes these difficult issues are tough, but when we come together and work on them, I think we come out with a better results for our students. And caseloads is a really important issue for paperwork and reduction of paperwork, as well as it's really important in terms of the services that we give to students and how many students are with one teacher. So it'll be good for us to look at not only that, but paperwork and how we're providing services to students and how can we just do that, like Sue said, in a better way. So just really appreciate the collaborative work and for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Marker. Anyone else? Language, would you like to move the A45 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I will move the A45 amendment.
Further discussion? Not. All in favor indicate aye.
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 Members, that completes this portion for the meeting this evening. And just to quickly review, I think we've adopted about 35 provisions, many same and similars, but also provisions addressing testing, which is major, charter schools, teacher testing. We had a good conversation on the evaluation program last night. The commissioner has developed some recommendations that we'll be pondering, as well as others on that subject. through testimony. Integration achievement program, there's drafts that are evolving on that that continues to be in discussion. World's Best Workforce, we're representative working on that. We're getting a lot of input on that as well to improve on that. And so, for each member, we're aware of your provisions too. And if we haven't addressed it yet, and whether it's EpiPens, coaching, nutrition, various items that are in there, it's all on our radar. And there's obviously we're looking at potential things that may be happening with the tax committee, factoring that in, offers that are coming close to being made. And once we get at that point, we'll probably get a better idea as to where a lot of these other things will end up. That might be the either our next meeting later this evening or early tomorrow. So that's where we see it at this point. And I want to thank each of the committee members for their input, and also for your tolerance in our running up and down all the time. But that's the way it is. Representative
Markler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to say you all look so spry, considering the meeting you had last night. It's good.
What's in there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've made a lot of very, very good progress, and I know we're very close on a lot of things, and with a lot of the policy done, I think a lot of the finance can start taking shape also soon.
Thank you, members. We're in recess.
Okay.